Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to the Hawaiian Islands. Hawaii State's nickname is the Aloha State because the word aloha is one of the most commonly used words in Hawaiian language. Based on the context, aloha can mean hello, welcome, love, best wishes, or even goodbye. It is the only state made up entirely of islands. There are 132 in the Hawaiian island chain, but people only visit 8 of them. The rest are protected from visitors because of their unique ecology. For further information about the Hawaiian Islands for children, I suggest HawaiiFact.com. All of the islands have been formed by volcanoes, so it is appropriate that we start today with the legend of Pele, the name of the goddess of the Hawaiian volcanoes. Here is Pele's revenge. Ohia and Lahua loved each other from the moment they first saw each other at a village dance. Ohia was a tall, strong man with a handsome face and lithe form. He was something of a trickster and was first in all the sports played by all the young men. Lahua was gentle and sweet and as fragile as a flower. Her beauty was the talk of the island, and her father was quite protective of his only child. When Lahua saw the handsome, bold Ohia speaking with her father besides the bonfire, she blushed crimson, unable to take her eyes from the young man. At the same moment, Ohia glanced up from his conversation, and his mouth dropped open at the sight of the beautiful maiden. He was not even aware that he had stopped speaking right in the middle of the sentence, so overwhelmed was he by the sight of the fair maiden across the fire from him. Lahua's father nudged the young man, recalling him to his duties as a guest. Ohia stuttered and stammered apologies, trying to continue his conversation while keeping one eye on the fair Lahua. Lahua's father was amused by the young man's obvious infatuation with his daughter. He quite liked this bold trickster, and so he offered to introduce Ohia to his daughter. The young man almost fell over in his haste as they walked across the clearing to where Lahua stood with her friends. From that moment, there was no other woman for Ohia but Lahua. He had eyes only for her and courted her with a passion and zeal that swiftly won her heart. Her father gave his only daughter gladly into the keeping of the strong young man, and the young couple lived quite happily for several months in a new home Ohia built for his bride. Then one day, the goddess Pele was walking in the forest near the home of the handsome Ohia and spied the young man at work. Pele was smitten by him and went at once to engage him in conversation. Ohia spoke politely to the beautiful woman, but did not respond to her advances, which infuriated Pele. She was determined to have this young man for herself, but before she could renew her efforts, Lahua came to the place her young husband was working to bring him his midday meal. When he saw his lovely wife, Ohia's face lit up with love. He dropped everything at once and went to her side, leaving a fuming Pele to stare in jealous rage at the young couple. Dropping her human disguise, the goddess transformed into a raging column of fire and struck Ohia down, transforming him into a twisted, ugly tree in revenge for spurning her advances. Lahua fell to her knees beside the twisted tree that had once been her husband. Tears streaming down her lovely face, she begged Pele to turn him back into a man, or else turn her into a tree, as she could not bear to be separated from her beloved. But Pele ignored the girl, taking herself up to the cool heights, her anger satisfied. The gods saw what Pele had done to the innocent lovers and were angry. As Lahua lay weeping in despair, the gods reached down and transformed the girl into a beautiful red flower, which they placed upon the twisted Ohia tree, so that she and her beloved husband would never more be apart. From that day to this, the Ohia tree has blossomed with the beautiful red Lahua flowers. While the flowers remain on the tree, The weather remains sunny and fair, but when a flower is plucked from the tree, then heavy rain falls upon the land like tears, for Lehua still cannot bear to be separated from her beloved husband, Ohia. Next is a story about macadamia nuts, a delicious nut that Hawaiians love to eat. Here is the story of the magic macadamia nuts. Ekewaka lived with his mama on the big island of Hawaii. They lived in a little grass hut and slept on the dirt floor on top of mats made of woven palm leaves. Ekewaka went fishing every day so that he and his mama would have some food to eat. Each morning, his mama picked bananas, mangoes, and papaya from the trees and gathered coconuts that had fallen to the ground. Ekewaka's favorite thing to eat was macadamia nuts. He'd only tasted them a few times, but he remembered their delicious tastes. He'd often dream about his mama dropping nuts into his mouth one after another and never ever running out. One morning, when the sky was blue and the gentle trade winds were blowing softly across the island, Ekewaka went for a walk along the beach. He had gotten up early to hunt for seashells for his mama. She loved to put them around the hut and sometimes made necklaces out of the small ones. He had collected an armful of big shells and was on his way home when three older boys came running towards him. They stopped in front of Ekewaka, and one of them knocked the beautiful shells out of his hands. They dropped onto the sand. The boys picked them up and threw them back into the water, where the waves carried them out to sea. Ekewaka stood silently, watching the shells disappear. He noticed one of the boys take a handful of macadamia nuts. The boy noticed Ekewaka staring at them. "What you looking at? Oh, so you see my magic macadamia nuts, do you?" he asked, winking at his two bully friends. "These are magic nuts. If you plant them, a big palm tree will appear, and it will grow huge coconuts made of gold. Would you like these macadamia nuts, Ekewaka?" he teased. "How can macadamia nuts turn into coconuts?" he asked. "They're magic. Since my friends tossed your seashells away, I'll be the nice one and give you my magic nuts," the boy said, placing them in Ekewaka's hands. "Now be sure to plant them. Don't eat them." Ekewaka ran home quickly, holding the nuts tightly in his hand. The three bullies laughed at him as he ran away. "Stupid Ekewaka," one of them called. "What a fool," said another. None of the boys knew those really were magic nuts. Ekewaka wanted to eat the nuts. He was hungry, and they looked delicious, but he ran straight home. Using his hands, he dug a deep hole in the rich brown earth. He dropped the magic macadamia nuts into the hole and covered them up, patting the dirt down gently. He was about to run and find his mama, but decided to wait and surprise her with the golden coconuts. His mama walked into the little shack, carrying some bananas and a coconut. She was wearing a few pretty red hibiscus and plumeria blossoms behind her ear, tucked in her hair. "You were awake very early this morning, Ekewaka. Did you go for a walk on the beach?" she asked. "I went to find you some seashells," he answered. He didn't want to tell her about the bullies. Quickly changing the subject, Ekewaka asked, "Can I have some coconut milk?" His mama took a large knife and chopped the top off the hairy brown coconut. It was filled with white, watery milk. She handed it to him, and he slurped it down. She peeled a banana and shared it with her son. "Will you catch us a fish for supper tonight?" she smiled. Ekewaka nodded yes. Some days he tired of eating bananas, coconuts, and fish. He watched his mama as she gathered the washing. She hung it out on a vine to dry. He remembered cutting the vine and tying it to the trees for her. Ekewaka felt sad that his mother had to work so hard. "Soon she won't be tired or sad any more," he whispered. While his mama worked out in the garden, Ekewaka went back to the beach and caught a fish for supper. That night, at his bedroom window, he watched as the moon shone down on the mound where the magic nuts were buried. The next morning, Ekewaka jumped up from his palm leaf mat. He ran to the window, and there stood a huge palm tree full of coconuts. His eyes opened wide with excitement. He shook his mama awake. "Mama, come and see the tree." "Where did that come from?" she asked. She saw the thick gathering of coconuts at the top. "Ekewaka, I don't know how that coconut palm got there, but "Please climb up and gather some of those big ones," she begged. He ran outside and climbed the tree. He hit two of them and they fell to the ground. They looked like normal coconuts to him. He climbed down and carried them into the shack and gave them to his mama. She chopped the stringy green husk off and she reached in to pull the smaller coconut out. She let out a gasp. "It's a golden coconut!" It shone and sparkled with the sun's rays. It looked like a coconut with two holes. When she hit the holes, coconut milk spilled out, but there was no meat inside, just pure, solid gold. She began to laugh. Ekawaka laughed with joy as he poured the coconut's rich milk into his mouth. "Climb up and get the other coconuts, Ekawaka," his mama said. He cut a few more down. She chopped them open, and they were all made of gold. Just as he climbed down from the tree with the last coconut in his hand, the tree disappeared. All that was left was the small mound of dirt he'd buried the macadamia nuts in. He dug up the hole. The nuts were gone. There was nothing there. Ekawaka went back into the grass shack. His mama was crying. "What's the matter, Mama? Aren't you happy?" he asked. "I'm happy, Ekawaka. Never again will we be poor. Never again will we be hungry or have to catch our own fish or gather papaya," she sobbed. "With these golden coconuts, we can have all the things we need and more." And they did. Ekawaka could have all the macadamia nuts he wanted from then on. And he did. His mama could have all the mangoes, guava, and pineapple that she wanted. And she did. She could buy herself a brand new muumuu and Ekawaka a pair of sandals. And she did. They could live happily ever after. And they did. You are listening to Gima's Tales for Children on KCIW LP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon. Our last story today is about a baby swordfish. He had many adventures and ended up near the Hawaiian Islands, where he finally made his home. Here is The Legend of the Mighty Zigzag by E.G. French. Zigzag had happily spent the entire day chasing reef fish all around the coral. It was a brand new reef that his parents had just moved close to in hopes of good hunting grounds, and he had been anxious to explore it. He twirled and spun with delight as he told his parents about the day. This morning it had been chasing the yellow and black stripers, then the little blue ones, and his favorite was a puffer fish all by itself. That was the best sport of all. He had hidden behind a coral head, just waiting, and then pounced. The poor puffer puffed up in fear, and then Zig, his parents' nickname for him, had spent hours just pushing the poor thing around the reef. It was really like a big ball when it puffed up, and Zig's sharp-pointed snout was the perfect tool to push and poke it, much as if it were a large underwater balloon. While it didn't hurt the puffer fish, it wasn't really nice to tease it that way, and Zig's parents ended up giving him quite a lecture. "Zigzag, how could you do that?" Zig knew he was in trouble because his parents never used his full name unless they were unhappy about his behavior. He bowed his little head in dismay. After all, he'd just been having the grandest time. Being a respectful son, he listened to his parents. His father spoke sternly to him. "Zigzag, you should know better. Remember when you were chased by that little mer-dog near the reef where we used to live? You were so scared that you raced home. That pufferfish probably felt the same way you did." His mother added, "Someday you will be one of the greatest fish in all the oceans, and you will need to remember that while you must eat to survive, you must never be cruel in the process. Never hurt or scare another just for your own amusement, or you will become feared and loathed by others. If you aren't careful, your thoughtlessness toward others will lead to an empty life, with no family, friends, or love." "But Mom, Dad," cried Zigzag, "I wasn't trying to be mean. I was just having fun." "Well," replied his father, "do you think the pufferfish was having fun too?" Zigzag thought for a moment and then bowed his head again. "Well, probably not," he said softly. "No, he wouldn't have puffed up unless I scared him, I guess. I'm sorry. It wasn't really a good thing to do." And now, after listening to his parents, he realized he felt horrible. That poor pufferfish had been terrified, and while it had been funny at the time, it wasn't funny anymore. "So, my son, what are you going to do about it?" asked his mother. Zigzag looked up at her with sad eyes. He thought for a moment and answered hesitantly, "You mean, do about the pufferfish?" His mother just looked at him. Obviously, he was supposed to think of something. Zigzag wanted to say the right thing. After all, he was like most good children who really want their parents to be happy with them. He looked up again. "Well, Mother, I guess the right thing to do would be to find that pufferfish and tell him I'm sorry." Both his parents looked quite pleased, and his father's eyes softened a bit. "That's a good answer, Zigzag, although at this point that poor pufferfish is going to take one look at you and puff up again, unless it can swim to a hiding place fast enough to get away. After all, it will think you're back to torment it again." Zig's mother turned to her husband. "Darling, I have an idea. What if we go ahead of Zigzag, find the pufferfish, and let him know that our son has realized what a bad thing he has done, that he means no harm and would like to apologize?" After thinking about it for a few seconds, Zig's father said, "Absolutely the right thing. Let's find him. Zig, are you up for this?" Zig quickly nodded his agreement. So the entire swordfish family, father, mother, and son, headed toward the coral reef where Zigzag had been playing that morning. His parents proceeded ahead of Zigzag, who followed at a little distance, nervous about the upcoming confrontation. And of course he was zigging and zagging, which is how he got his name in the first place. He liked to push his little swordfish snout one way and then another. He loved the sensation of the currents as he sliced through them with his long, thin snout. He heard a loud cry ahead of him. He looked up and saw his parents, but something wasn't right. His father seemed to be struggling with something painful, something that was dragging him up to the surface. A long, thin line was attached to his father's mouth. "Zig, swim away as fast as you can," his mother screamed. She swam up toward his father, who was now nearing the surface with surprising speed. She turned once more, and with all the authority she could muster, said, "Go now! Go to the reef now!" Zig was terrified. He did as she asked. He turned and sped for the safety of the reef. It was hours later that he finally peered out into the deep blue of the ocean. His parents weren't there, nothing but blue as far as he could see. "Oh, please," he thought, "let them come back to me." He finally decided he would have to swim out and find them. He ventured out a little way, heading in the direction of their home, a large rocky protrusion rising off the ocean's floor. It was safe for him because he could hide in the rocks, and his parents, being large, could float on the ocean's floor safely at night. He found the rock, but his parents weren't there. Zig didn't know where else to go, so he just waited. He waited for so long. He was hungry and lonely and didn't know what to do. He had a terrible feeling that his parents were truly gone. Somehow they had vanished, or they would surely have come back. Zigzag, finally, nearly faint from hunger, decided to venture out of what used to be his home and head for shore and the coral reef, the only other place he knew. He was too small to hunt in the vast ocean for food. It would have to be the little reef fish and anything else he could eat. He found plenty, for the coral reef was abundant with food. Little octopi on the sandy floor, small sardines, and even a mackerel or two. He liked to wait on the floor of the reef, looking up, and then, when they weren't paying attention, slip up behind them and swallow them in one gulp. So life went on for Zig, hunting, then sleeping at night in the coral, and as the days turned into weeks, he grew quite bitter. Sometimes the loneliness would be overwhelming. There were no other swordfish in the reef, and he would see the countless schools of other fish all together, all happy and laughing. "If I hadn't been teasing any of you that day, my parents would still be alive. It's my fault they died." With each day, his bitterness grew greater until it consumed him entirely. He was so angry no one came near him. No one wanted to be friends because he would either chase them or simply ignore them. One day, in the early morning, right after he woke up, some new creatures appeared in the reef. He'd never seen anything like them before. They were near the surface, so, rising up, he headed toward them. They were too big to eat, and, being extremely cautious, he was careful in his approach. They were large and oval in shape, with small necks attached to very oddly shaped heads coming out of one end. They had four limbs with webbed feet, and they seemed to move very slowly. He watched as they sank and ate the seagrass off the sandy bottom. They seemed so quiet and contented, almost peaceful. Zig spent the day watching them. He was partly hidden behind a coral fan, as he didn't want to be noticed. They didn't dart this way and that like the little reef fish. They just hung out around the coral. He felt calmer around them. Slowly one turned its head. "Hey, little fella, greetings," it said with a smile. "You can come out from behind that coral fan. We won't hurt you. What's your name?" Zig hadn't had anything ask him for his name in a long time. Part of him wanted to just turn away, but another part, the lonely part, wanted to stay. Slowly, he swam around the coral fan until he was directly in front of these unusual creatures. "I'm Zigzag," he replied. "Hey, guys, looky here. Since the last time we were here, we have a new one in the reef, and he's a cute little fella." The others looked around with interest in their bright, intelligent eyes. Zig was a little disconcerted. Nobody had paid any attention to him in a long time. He wasn't sure what to do. "Don't be afraid, little fella," said the first one. "We're sea turtles, and we won't hurt you. We graze the reefs of the world and travel the seven seas. We love to meet new creatures and hear all the news, so please tell us all about you." Well, Zigzag was totally stunned. No one except his parents had ever taken an interest in him in his whole young life. He felt a chip of loneliness fall off his heart, and a tiny smile crept in to take its place. These were the friendliest creatures he had ever met. For their part, the sea turtles were pleased to meet this little swordfish. In all their wanderings, they rarely met such creatures. They knew about swordfish, for they had seen them in the vast blue of the deep ocean, but they'd never met a little one. And so a wonderful friendship began. As Zig came to trust them more, he finally was able to tell them the horrible story of why he was alone. He was finally able to say what caused the greatest pain of all. "It was all my fault." When he finished, he looked up at his friends. All the sea turtles had stopped their munching to listen to the story of his parents and how they had never returned. One turtle swam right up to little Zig and gently touched him. "Zig, your parents didn't leave you. They were pulled out of the ocean by humans. Undoubtedly, your father was caught by one of their terrible curved hooks, and your mother, she probably ended up in the net." Another came up on Zig's other side. "Zigzag, this wasn't your fault. Humans fish the entire ocean for swordfish. It's one of their favorite foods. They must have been hunting for your parents for days. Come on, little one. It was just a matter of fate, yours and theirs. You must let go of your guilt. You didn't do anything other than be, well, a cute little swordfish. Do you think your parents would have let you play in the reef if they thought it was bad for you or the other fish?" said another. "This is where they wanted you to be, and all they were doing on that particular day was giving you a lesson that would help you when you grew up, nothing more." They were the words Zigzag needed to hear, that he wasn't to blame, that it was just a horrible thing that had happened, and that horrible things sometimes happen, and we have no control over them. The last chips of loneliness fell from around Zigzag's heart. Zigzag looked up at his new friends. "Thank you for listening to me and for caring," he said. "You have no idea what it means to be near all of you. You are all so wonderful and kind." The sea turtles just smiled, for they knew Zigzag was finally feeling better, and sea turtles really do like to make other creatures happy. Very few know the real truth about sea turtles. They love nothing more than to travel the seven seas and bring peace and contentment to all they meet.
"Well, Zigzag, it's time for us to tell you something important."
The sea turtles all nodded in agreement and slowly circled around little Zigzag.
"We would like to give you our gift, a gift we learned a long time ago from some friends of ours, the humpback whales. If you don't mind, we'd like to sing a song just for you."
Zigzag felt so flattered. A song? Just for him? He was overwhelmed by their loving thoughtfulness. Bashfully, he lowered his little head.
"Okay, guys, but you don't have to do any more, really."
The sea turtles just grinned, and began what can only be considered the most amazing bit of harmonic underwater singing that Zigzag and all the creatures in that particular coral reef had ever heard. "Remember the good and forget the bad. If you do, you will always be glad. Never stray from learning the truth. Just remember to be happy and free. Love what you have and keep looking ahead. Be the best you can be, be, be. Don't do things that you know are bad. Remember instead to be happy, not sad. Live your life in a state of harmony. Find a way to make things seem funny. Love what you have and keep looking ahead. Be the best you can be, be, be." And then the turtles, in perfect harmony, sang the last two lines of their song. "Just love what you have and keep looking ahead and be all you can be." When they finished, they just looked at each other and smiled. They couldn't sing as well as their friends, the humpbacks, but still, they were definitely able to carry a tune. "Well, Zigzag," said one turtle, "what are you going to do? You can't stay here in this reef forever. Come on, little one. You're going to be growing up soon, and you'll be so big you won't fit in here." Zigzag looked at them, confused. He hadn't thought much about his future. After a moment, he said, "I don't know. I guess my parents were going to show me the ocean, but now I don't know what to do." "Why don't you come with us?" asked another sea turtle. "We're about done here, and we'll be heading out into the ocean soon. You could travel with us until you're big and strong. We'll keep you safe." From that day forward, Zigzag never looked back. He grew big and strong, just like his father. He traveled with the turtles through all the seas of this world. He finally met the humpback whales, who were dear friends of the turtles, and when he was old enough, he traveled with them for a while. One lovely day, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, near the islands which are known as Hawaii, he met a beautiful lady swordfish, and in time they had many children. The most amazing thing happened there, near the Hawaiian Islands where they made their home. The humans who had taken his father came to understand and respect the mighty swordfish and started to save them instead of catch them. As far as anyone knows, it is the only place in all of the oceans that it's occurred. Zigzag was one of the first to watch as a human boat tagged and released one of his fellows. He was too smart to even get close to any of those long lines that were dropped in the ocean. Why it happened there, where Zigzag made his home, no one can say, but some believe his suffering as a youngster and his ability to overcome his sadness were somehow a part of the answer. Zigzag made sure to teach his children the lessons he'd learned as a youngster. He made sure to pass on the message in the song of the sea turtles, and he also made his children study and spend time with them, for truly, they were some of the wisest creatures in the ocean. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to India, land of mystery, ancient civilization, and the great Buddha. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIWLP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.